This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date, listen on demand anytime, anywhere. The best way to stay up to date with everything happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN is downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Download and listen today to stay up to date. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company here on this Thursday is the Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. He's also the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. He's on Twitter, on X, at DeMichael C. DeMichael Cole, good day, sir.
What's going on, Jeffrey? What's going on?
It's good to have you in studio, buddy. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about here on the program. With DeMichael here, I think it makes the most sense. Let's start out with some Grizzlies. He was there last night. We'll get his thoughts on kind of some big picture stuff, as well as Taylor Jenkins officially becoming the all-time winningest regular season head coach for the Grizzlies. If you still include playoff wins and regular season wins, Lionel is still, I think, Lionel's 9 games up, or maybe 10.
It's somewhere around there.
It's somewhere around that, yeah. But he now has the most regular season wins for a Grizzlies coach. And we'll get into kind of some big picture things with the Grizzlies, maybe get into a little bit of the tasting menu, what we're going to be watching this weekend, because we got another big weekend of college football. Maybe get DeMichael's thoughts on his Vols from last week, because I feel like DeMichael and I kind of saw the game the same way.
Yeah.
I think there were a lot of people that were maybe wanting to declare some type of devastating loss for Tennessee that I just didn't watch. Like, I thought it was, they played Georgia. Georgia didn't make any mistakes. They're tough to beat in that scenario.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe talk a little bit about that. Vols have UTEP this weekend. It's all just going to be a matter of just don't let Vanderbilt spoil it and see where the chips fall. And there's still enough football left that I don't think the Vols are done by any stretch of the imagination. No. So we might get into a little bit of tasting menu. Eric's going to join us like he does each and every Thursday. We'll get his thoughts on the Grizzlies as well. Get into the list at 3:05, including this story that DeMichael has shown me about needing parents to be in attendance so that you can go to high school games. So I want to discuss that. Jason Smith will join us maybe at that point. We'll also get into, at some point throughout the program, we'll get into Tigers USF tonight, but that might be a good spot to start with Jason. We'll discuss that. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. So last night, kind of the complete antithesis of a game from Wednesday or from Tuesday night, in which the Grizzlies couldn't make anything. It's the first time this year that they shoot sub 40% from the floor. Well, last night, they shoot 44% from 3, 19 of 43. And it's kind of one of those things where you have Joel Embiid returning to the lineup. You had Paul George returning to the lineup only to exit the lineup with another injury. But I kind of, I understand some of the frustration from Tuesday night, but I guess the way that I've always kind of viewed it is, if you're going to shoot 40% from the floor, you're not winning many basketball games in the NBA.
You're not winning like that.
The Grizzlies.
You can talk about defense all you want.
100%. And the irony was, I looked up, I think the Grizzlies, I don't know if it's updated from last night, but in defensive rating, I think they're around 107, which is the fourth best number in the league.
And they're going to stay there. They're going to be there.
Their defensive rating against the Nuggets on Tuesday night was like 105.
Mm-hmm.
So it was even better. Because defense is like golf. You want it to be a lower number. So it wasn't the defense. It was clearly the shooting. And then if you wanted to declare last night some great victory, which I'm not saying that a lot of people are, I just chalk that up to, if you're going to hit 19 threes, you better win the game.
Yeah.
And it got a little iffy. Did you think, when it got down to four with, what was it, about 50 seconds
left? Yep.
Did you think they were going to win?
I did, but when they threw that pass and Jarrett McCain almost jumped it, and Taylor Jenkins was talking about how, you know, it kind of flashed before his eyes, it was going to be interesting. But I felt like defensively, like they would pull it out, because at that point it was mostly Joel Embiid. You know, Tyrese Maxey had reached his 20 minutes.
Yep.
You know, for the minutes restriction, Paul George, like you said, was already gone. You had Jarrett McCain, but Jalen Wells, I felt like, was doing a solid job guarding him, so it was, just had to guard one guy. Like,
I didn't feel great until Embiid threw it out of bounds.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just,
if he made that, it was a one position game.
Correct. And the Grizzlies, it felt like, hadn't hit a shot in 3 minutes.
That's the problem right now when you don't have Ja Morant last couple minutes.
And so that's kind of where I think we should start. Let's go big picture. Mm-hmm. The Grizzlies are 9-7. I haven't looked today. Are they still eighth? I think they were in that giant log jam.
They're right there in that stretch. But yeah, they're ninth. But they're tied. They're tied with the Clippers and the Suns. All of them are 9-7. You got three teams 9-7, 7-8-9 in the standings. So they're technically third of the three teams. They're tied at 9-7. But again, they haven't played either of those teams. So.
Yeah, and they're not there. Whatever, the Timberwolves at 8-6. They're all. The Timberwolves have the advantage by win percentage, but in terms of games back, the Grizzlies are not a game back because they have one more win, more loss, but their win percentage is slightly worse. So they're kind of all in that logjam at six, and the Nuggets are only a half game in front of
them. Even down to 11 with the Mavs, they're 8-7.
Correct.
It's the Western Conference.
So big picture, you're seeing this team night in, night out.
Yep.
Is this team good in your mind?
I think they're solid. And what I mean by that is they have real strengths. Like the teams, the 2022 team that won 56 games, the 2023 team that won 51 games, they have areas where they can go against anyone and say, we're better than you in these areas. When it comes to getting in the paint and scoring in the paint, the Grizzlies are still upper echelon, elite, best team in the NBA right now. When it comes to offensive rebound percentage, when Zach Edey was playing, he was top five in the NBA offensive rebound percentage. So they're still a quality offensive rebounding team. Transition scoring in Taylor Jenkins' era, they've always been near the top of the NBA. You know, last season is the outlier for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Same thing this season. They're right up there. Pace, fast break points, all of that. So they have areas where they say, we have a clear identity. We got to get out in transition. We got to score in the paint. We can limit teams defensively, like you said, top five defensive rating. Another thing that's been a hallmark under Taylor Jenkins. You're going to have a strong defense, and that defense is going to allow you to get out and run in transition. So I say all that to say they're solid, but their areas of weakness are big areas of weakness for solid to elite teams. To be an elite NBA team in this year, in 2024, 2025, you got to be able to really shoot the basketball. That's how the Celtics won the championship. You go now. When I last checked, I think it was like six teams averaging over 43-point attempts per game. It's probably changed a little bit now. But the Grizzlies are nowhere near that number, and quite frankly, they shouldn't be, because that's not a strength of their game. But if you go through the last, I think, 7-8 years of NBA champions, all the teams who have won championships have been top 10 in three-point field goal percentage except one. That was the Los Angeles Lakers during the bubble year. And, you know, they were just huge. So that problem, the three-point shooting, and we just touched on it. Yep. They shot really well yesterday. And I was watching the Nuggets game, and we were talking about how poorly they shot in both cup games. They were 16 of 80 in the two cup games so far, if you include the Golden State one. If you combine those two games, those were probably, you know, I guess from an approach standpoint, as close as you get to a playoff atmosphere, whatever the case may be in a regular season.
But especially November.
In November. Like, and those, you can say, oh, they were anomalies or whatever the case may be, but we saw a lot of those in the last two playoff runs. Like, not maybe those exact percentages, but we saw a lot of games where the Grizzlies just didn't shoot well from beyond the arc. And I'm looking at the Nuggets game, and I'm like, yeah, they're missing Ja, they're missing Gigi, but neither of those guys are going to come here and shoot 43% from three-point range. So that's a problem where you just need guys to shoot better.
Yeah, I'd like to run the numbers because anecdotally, I do feel like, though, while you're 100% correct about Ja and Gigi in particular raising the shooting average.
Yeah.
I do feel like when Ja's on the floor, they get, maybe it's not Ja contributing in terms of his making the shots, mm-hmm. but I do feel like everybody else shoots better
mm-hmm.
because usually you're more open.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of the other struggle that I have. It's like, I think that they have done a good job so far of, you've had a lot of games without Ja
mm-hmm.
and they're not falling apart.
That's the best part. They have definitely improved from last season. That was one of the biggest questions coming into the season for me. How will this team play when Ja Morant is not on the floor? And they've been solid. Like,
the problem, though, I guess that I have is, if Ja's not on the floor, I think all this exercise is academic.
Yeah.
Like, spoiler alert, if everybody's sitting down for this, like, we can only talk about ceiling with this team if he's going to be playing.
Yep.
And I guess that's kind of the bigger question. In your sense of, I know Ja seems to be putting out the bat signal that it's closer.
Yeah.
I still have a tough time thinking, like, when you read that a guy has got a slightly dislocated hip,
yeah,
that it's just going to be like, all right, we'll see in a couple of weeks.
Don't just jump up and come play from that.
Yeah, ice and Advil. But like, it does. Where are you in terms of, like, how realistic is it to think that we'll see him here within the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's realistic that we'll see him in the next couple of weeks, but it's also been a couple of weeks, you know, at this point.
Right.
Like, I don't, like, when he said sooner than later, and I know people were saying, oh, does that mean he's going to be back this week? And I'm like, no, well, don't set those expectations for yourself. It's like you said, the ball of his hip literally went out of place.
Yes.
And came back. Like, that is that's tough. But yeah, I think we'll see him in the next couple weeks at some point. He's not on the crutches anymore, which I talked to an independent doctor who's dealt with a lot of these type of injuries with.
Which is fairly uncommon in basketball.
Very
correct?
Uncommon. He compared it to something that's more commonly seen than car crashes.
Yeah. Which is always a good thing, right?
That's the type of
2,000-pound car going 65 miles an hour slams into you. Like, that's what this is
that's
like.
That's what this is like. Like,
that's encouraging.
So I think, yeah, within the next couple of weeks, which is good because you look at the next four games, all teams under 500. And I mean, next five games. And four of those games are at home. So if there's a stretch, you say, hey, you know, John's going to miss some games. It's no time like the present, because after this, when you get to early December, it gets tough. And then you get to the late part of December, it gets really tough. So you need the boys back healthy for that December run.
And so I guess that would be the reasonable follow-up. When we're talking about, all right, the Grizzlies have not, like, they haven't blown it out of the water, but they haven't killed themselves.
Yeah, this is what we expected last season, right? Remember the 25-game stretch without Ja?
It was just like,
saying just tread water while he's out.
If you can
They've done that.
Get it at the minimum to double digits, but, try to find a way to stay around 500.
Yep.
I think the question that many would ask is, given what the schedule has produced so far,
yeah,
should they be better than this?
You shouldn't have lost to the Nets twice on the second leg of back-to-back.
The second one was infuriating, especially when you consider that they just had the Bulls game.
Yep.
And so it's like, all right, if you give that kind of effort when a team was coming on the second night of a back-to-back,
uh-huh,
and that was the result that you gave, all right, that's a tough one. I guess the way that I've kind of looked at it is, at times I feel like this team has been a little immature, and that I feel like there have been a few games. Like, I understand there's going to be, over the course of an 82-game season, there's going to be nights where you just don't have it.
Yeah.
But there's been a few times where I felt like they came into the game thinking, like, this is going to be cake.
Yeah.
And then
it's kind of some statistical backing to that. You know, they've lost, I think, the first leg of back-to-backs three times, and they've won the second leg of them each time.
Like, and it's almost like they have to get, like, their cage rattled a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if you're – and I acknowledge this is, like, trying to – like, you're really kind of trying to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's kind of something in the back of my mind I filed away. It's like, I feel like there's just been some immature performances. But at the same time,
it's a new offense.
Correct. So it's like, how much of it is, mm-hmm, and you're not playing without your guy.
Yeah.
And by the way, your guy is your point guard.
Yeah, this isn't just some 3-and-D plug-in.
Correct.
Guy.
This is not a perimeter score. Yeah. This is the engine that is driving everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I also kind of look at it in these terms. It's like the biggest negative that I have with the team is injuries.
Yep.
And then I still don't get the warm and fuzzies watching Brandon Clark saying that looks like peak BC. And maybe it's possible after an Achilles, you're never going to see peak BC. I will say that I have felt the last couple of weeks better. And this is eye test only. This is not looking at numbers. This is strictly looking at eye test going, okay, I think he's starting to, like, he's been really gritty at the rim.
Yeah,
he's getting like a lot of those, like, the hallmarks
eye test
of his
to
game.
Me is better than the numbers, than certain numbers. The analytical numbers, the advanced numbers for him are really good, which is why, if you don't know, Taylor Jenkins is really into those. And his staff,
way.
Like, well, you know, like, they're really into those numbers and whatnot. So that is kind of a big reason why he's playing on the floor and things like that, because of the way he plays alongside of Jaren Jackson Jr. and the defense and things like that. But when you watch him up close, I'm watching, and, like, you want to, like, think, like, oh, it's Achilles. You know, has some of his, you know, athleticism been jabbed? But I'm watching the game, the last two games, even the Nuggets game, his second jump is still super explosive. Like, when he goes up for an offensive rebound and it's being – Brandon Clark is always one of those guys hand in there, tapping the ball out. Sometimes it goes to a Grizzlies player, sometimes it doesn't. But he's always around from that perspective. He still plays with a lot of energy. It's just the finishing probably isn't as good, which is why he's relying. And he said this to me before the season. You know, it was going to be more of the floater, less of the dunking and things like that. And I think we're seeing that. But the other thing is the three-point shot, and it's, you know, Taylor Jenkins pretty much green lights all these guys to shoot three-pointers, and it's just not working out for BC.
Like, yeah, because when you mentioned that, like, that second jump,
it's like Zion almost. Like,
I can't remember if it was Tuesday's Nuggets game or if it was Sunday's, but there was one where I'm pretty sure DeAndre Jordan was on the floor, and it looked like DeAndre had position.
Yep,
and Brandon was behind the play, but you could tell, like, he was reading the basketball off of the rim, and he had, like, he went up top and got a rebound. I was like, oh,
he can still explode at times.
I was like, okay, that was starting to make me feel better. But, like, I guess to me, it's like this question of how much of this season is just going to be told solely through injuries, because it does feel like, and I understand why fans have PTSD, but it does feel like, yet again, here we are, and I know every team's story can be told by injuries, more or less, but it's like, it's yet again, it's the critical guys so far that you, like, you couldn't afford to have Ja Morant essentially be 8 games on the floor.
Yeah, and it's tough because I'm around these guys a decent amount, and I see guys particularly doing different things to avoid. I don't know how much people have noticed, but Ja's only attempted 2 dunks this year.
No, I mean, that's the other thing.
He's not even been dunked, and it was purposely. This is intentional. He said it. So I'm not going to be dunking as much. He's not been going to the rim trying to dunk on dudes. You saw the spinning reverse layups and things like that. That's what he's been doing.
He's reinvented layups.
Yeah.
He made layups cool again.
Exactly. And what happens is an alley-oop gets thrown to him, and he has no choice. And then comes down on his hip, gets hurt. So some of it is, you know, it's that. It's Vince Williams rehabbing for 8 months, coming back to play 2 games, and then badly spraining his ankle. You know, just battling for a position. It's Zach Edey not getting injured pretty much entire college career outside of an illness one time, or I think it was.
Yeah, I don't think he missed games for injury in his career.
No, just illness. Desmond Bane didn't miss a game in college either. Matter of fact, he didn't miss a game in his life before he got to the league.
So, and this is kind of the question I was discussing yesterday, so I'd rather have your opinion than mm-hmm. just somebody watching largely on TV. Are they made of glass?
I think some of it is bad luck. Some of it is the playing style. Like you have this, you know, the paint. Like they are
a heavy paint team.
They are a heavy paint team. And paint Taylor touches. Jenkins, not even just scoring in the paint. The idea for the Grizzlies offense is you have
attack.
To touch the paint
right,
every possession. The analytical numbers for the Grizzlies, they follow these analytical numbers that tell you, like, when we touch the paint, we average 1 point whatever points per possession. When we don't touch the paint, we average less than a point per possession. This is one of their favorite analytical numbers. So when you have that, you have Desmond Bane going to the rim, you know, taking the blow here, Ja Morant, and those type guys. But the injuries that we're seeing is like Zach Edey battling for positioning. You know,
well, don't forget we have to go back to the original sin.
Yeah.
Draymond.
Yeah.
Draymond put it into motion.
And I don't understand that. I don't.
So I guess though maybe this all goes back to your original point of, okay, it's just not a great shooting team, which is not a surprise to us. We did know this coming in. And honestly, I think I would say so far this season, I feel a little bit better about them shooting. I'm not saying like, oh, I think they're going
They got better shooters than they did those other years.
Correct. There are more guys that can take threes right now that I feel comfortable going, that was a good shot, than I have ever before. But it's still a below average NBA shooting team from three. And so is the problem, because it's not a great shooting team, therefore you are forced to attack the paint.
And make yourself a little bit more vulnerable. Yeah. I think that's part of it. Because you look at certain teams, you know, like Oklahoma City last season.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't a problem for them. And Boston, to a different degree, with the way that they play, you just don't see a lot of that. But, again, I think a lot of it is just being unlucky. And the job one is an example of, you know, players like that's, but that's what he's trying to avoid. Like he hasn't, it's not like he's been jumping for alley-oops all season. That was the one time.
That was what I thought was ironic about the injuries. Like I really feel like for the most part this season, he's been very smart.
He has.
About what he's been doing with his body and just how he's played. Like in general, like I was just like, I thought he was playing the best basketball of his career. Like I've not seen him
he's
have
in
that
control.
Kind of command.
Yes. He's in control. Yeah. We're on the same page. He's
absolutely. But it keeps coming back to me. It's like, all right, the numbers suggest either they are the least lucky injury team, and before everyone screams, like, I know Luka's going to miss some time with injuries, and other teams have injuries. But I looked at the numbers yesterday, and last year, not only number one in injuries,
it was a record.
It was like double the 29th team. And I get it. They were also playing a lot of guys. And if you were trying to play, you know, a 15-man team, like, the numbers got boosted up because they kept bringing in so many different guys.
All like, these 10-day contracts.
I do understand all of that. With that said, they were still missing a ton of days. And this year, it's the same thing.
Yep.
They are number one in the league in terms of number of games missed from guys that you were expecting to play and number of days missed. And then if you go back, the previous season, okay, it wasn't number one, but it was like top eight in the league. And then I want to say the year before was top 12. And so that's really the year they had the best injury luck.
Yeah, yep.
And they were still a top half of the league team.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's always been this question of, okay, I want to give the benefit of the doubt that I think it's also very clear that the Grizzlies are near the top of the league in terms of being overly cautious in what they do about injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're telling me that that approach lends itself to having guys healthy in the playoffs, well, then why have they not been healthy in the playoffs?
Yeah,
because there seems to be some kind of disconnect. And if your theory is true, this is the one that I can at least ascribe to the most. Well, part of the problem is they got to go into the paint.
Yeah.
And that's how they score. Well, that makes a little bit more sense to me. But like at a certain point, are you not having to evaluate that? Because to me, it's like, you know what's better than points per possession on whether or not I touch the paint? Making sure that I have John Morant on the floor.
70 games.
Making sure I have Desmond Bane on the floor. And making sure I have Jaren on the floor.
Yeah. That's what it's going to come down to. But, again, some of it is being unlucky. Some of it is, putting themselves in some of those vulnerable situations. But at the end of the day, like, I feel like now they have the experience. They have enough data where we see Ja is trying to be smarter. And he's going to generally avoid those alley-oop type situations. Desmond Bane has started to do more with taking care of his body. We'll see how that works out. And Jaren, I mean, people haven't talked about it a lot, but you remember early in Jaren's career, the thought was he was the injury problem. Now he's the one holding it down the last couple years.
That's what I said the same thing yesterday. It's like you would have thought of the three guys, the guy that you would be talking about injuries the most would be the 7-footer.
And he's holding it down.
Yeah. And even when you get the scare, was it last night or 2 nights ago?
A couple nights ago, yeah.
The Nuggets over. Game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get the scare. All right, call timeout. He's back out there.
Yep.
And I do feel like Jaren is maybe getting underappreciated because the guy's showing
he's
up night
there.
In, night
he's
out.
Out there.
And,
mm-hmm. and he's playing the five a lot more too, so he's banging. Like
correct.
Yeah.
And to me it's like it's very obvious. All right, when he's on the floor, they're better.
Yep.
But then it all kind of comes back to what do you make of all right, so far we've seen the new approach with the new offense, more pace.
Yep.
Decreased minutes.
Yep.
What have your reviews been?
It's fine to me this point of the season. And Taylor Jenkins has said eventually they're gonna cut it down. It's gonna be 9-man, 10-man rotation. But the idea is he keeps saying short bursts. Play these guys. Like I know people were having a problem. Like, why are Dez and Jaren coming out with 8 minutes left in the first quarter? Their thought process is they're trying to do something where there's no data on this over the course of league history and how this works.
So
they're trying it out.
Would they say that they're still in the lab?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not because, again, right. You know, they're real deep into the numbers, and the sample size is not big enough yet. But you talk to the players, there isn't a player on the Grizzlies team that has told me this is an easy transition. Like, they are very open and honest that this Jai said it's a challenge. Dez has said it. Several other players, Luke Kennard has talked about it. Like, and these are the older guys.
Yep.
So imagine how it is for the younger players. And this is a very young team. So this is not easy. That's why we're seeing the flashes where they've had, what, like 8 games already with 30-plus assists?
Yes.
And then we also see the flashes where they're having 24 turnovers and like 22 turnovers against the Nuggets.
See Tuesday night.
Yeah, right. And it looks real sloppy. So, I think the goal, like I was talking to Marcus Smart about it not too long ago, and he was saying that eventually a lot of teams in the NBA are going to slow down. Like everyone comes into the season with fresh legs and, oh, we're going to get up and down. We want to play fast. And eventually teams will slow down because a lot of those other teams, guys are playing 33, 34, 35 minutes right now.
Yeah.
Their thinking is when January and February gets here and when the teams go down a possession or two per game, we're still going to be hitting our stride because we've been playing our guys 30, 31 minutes. And that's when our pace is really going to kind of, you know, inflict itself on opponents.
And I guess kind of the other complication with all of this is we are we're approaching like a new reality of the NBA where it seems to me like, yes, you'd love to have a home series in the playoffs and you want to win as many games as possible. But it seems like the
only thing,
they care about two things. Number one, avoid the play-in.
Yep.
And then number two, be healthy.
Yep.
Like that seems, and that's a different reality. Like, I mean, I remember when you had teams who were like, well, we've got to go all out in April because we got to get that home series. Yeah. And, and maybe that's more reflective of more organizations that have owners that are less caring about whether or not they get a couple extra home games for revenue and whatnot.
I think it's more the veteran teams that really don't care. The younger teams are trying to get that home. But like when Golden State beat Sacramento a couple, they didn't care about the home
at all.
Stuff.
No, I mean, we saw the Lakers.
We saw them because
they were ahead of that season that you're talking about.
The Grizzlies and the Warriors were battling for the two, and then the Warriors just
like Steph hurt his ankle or foot, and they're like, "We'll see in the playoffs."
They don't care,
and they played their way into the three, and so I do think that matters. But so far, it's also this thing where you recognize it's a long season, and we're very early in. I do wonder though if the fact that the schedule has actually probably given them some breaks.
It's been an easy schedule for them so far.
In terms of not only the form of some of the teams that you're seeing, but like who's been available.
Yep.
I do wonder if you look back and you go, man, they kicked away a couple that would have mattered.
I think so for sure. I can't escape those two Nets games. Like those were ones you look at the schedule before the season, you're like, man, the Nets are on a travel back-to-back. Then you get them on their court, but they're on the second leg of a back-to-back. Neither time you play them, you're on a back-to-back. This would be chalked-in wins, but lost both of those. Of course, that Bulls game, you know, 126, giving up 126 to the Bulls. You're going to lose some sleep over that. Those stand out to me. Like the Warriors, Rockets, the Lakers lost, like, it is what it is.
Well, like, I forgot what the final numbers were. I'm trying to look at that Chicago game before we take a quick break and get Eric's thoughts. The Bulls had 53 threes. And if I recall, I'm doing this from memory. If I recall, it was 41 of the 53 if you went to the shot dashboard.
Yeah.
No one within 6 feet. So wide open.
Taylor Jenkins cut up after that game. Yeah.
And I believe the final numbers were 49 of 53 were either open or wide open threes.
I think the Grizzlies are 5-1 this season when they get 30 or more assists.
Yeah.
That's the only game they lost.
Yes, because they were not in the same zip code as some of the shooters.
Couldn't guard them. Nope.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasteine joins the program. We will discuss his thoughts on the Grizzlies next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means that the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer Eric Hasteine is joining the program. All right, Eric, 9-7. When you look at it big picture, because I know you're the guy that taught me to do this, look at the season in segments. How do you feel like this first segment has gone in terms of like what grade would you give it?
B. I give it a B.
Okay.
I think because of little things like, you're talking about games that they didn't shoot the ball particularly well. It's almost an incomplete because you played so much of the segment without Ja or Dez, who you expected to have. I'm kind of waiting for the 20-game mark to really assess it, but you still have been missing a guy you were hoping to have for most of the year and your superstar player. I say a B because the offense is clearly exciting and fun to watch. And when the offense is on, the defense is good. Their defense was good last night. They've beaten a Philadelphia team twice that's pretty much beat up and in tatters. Yeah, they're a mess. And the first time you beat them, they didn't have any of their guys. The losses to Brooklyn, the loss to Chicago, they're going to happen throughout a year. It's just weird that it happened when it did. The loss to Denver without Jokic, again, those will happen. You know, Porter raised his game, but again, it was a night where you let missed shots dictate your defensive effort, and you're spending so much energy on the offensive end that when you keep giving that energy to me, and then you're not getting rewarded. It's almost human nature to, you know, get deflated a little bit, but you got to fight through that. And I think the conditioning will be there. It's a tough offense to just install and expect to work perfectly. I mean, even Draymond Green said it. They do things very differently. And so I'm sure a lot of these guys haven't seen some of these intricacies. I think you're seeing, development from guys, but you're asking Scottie Pippen Jr. to do something he's never really done, which is be a facilitator. He's always been a scorer. That's how he got to Vanderbilt. That's how he got, the two-way deal. He was a scoring guard. He was a combo guard. He wasn't a facilitator. I mean, Ja could score, but when you looked at Ja's assist numbers, and I'm not comparing Scottie to Ja, that's not fair, but when Ja was at Murray State, he was still getting assists. He was getting guys involved. He's been a point guard all of his life. You know, Scottie's been a scorer all of his life. And again, I don't want to say that like I know every minute detail of their youth basketball upbringing, because I don't. But it's just, it's going to a very difficult position. So I think you look at Jaren's progress, it's there. Santi's progress is there. Dez got on track. You knew he would. Luke got on track. You know he will. They're too good of shooters not to. You got to give an A to the rookies. Jalen Wells is better than anybody expected. Zach Edey has performed exactly like you wanted him to in terms of the numbers, obviously the ankle situation. But, A-plus, it could have been an A if you, had the wins against the teams that you thought you should beat. And if that's the case, that's okay too. So, it's a situation where I think they're going to improve. You're basically starting with a lack of knowledge of the intricacies of a system, and it's coming day by day. Now you're going to get really tested in these next, after, this coming game in Chicago, and then you come back home and you have that week, and you get into December and the test gets tough. So I think they're fun to watch. I think it's an enjoyable product, and I think they've proven they're one of the teams that's contending for postseason action.
Yeah, Eric, what's going on? It's DeMichael.
Hey, what's up, DeMichael?
I got one for you. Just curious, with the rotations and the usage. You know, Taylor Jenkins has talked a lot about like guys playing shorter bursts and whatnot, and that's kind of contributing to the way the minutes have been distributed to this point. Just what's your thoughts on how the Grizzlies have, used those rotations where we're not seeing guys play in the mid 30s, and things like that. How do you think they've handled that so far?
I know a lot of people have issues with it. I've been using the comparison kind of all the first part of the season with Indiana last year. If you look at their rotations early on, if you look at their struggles and successes early on last year before they caught that rhythm and, they were healthy and they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They caught teams in the playoffs at the right moment. They had injuries with Milwaukee, and I get that. They made it to the Emirates NBA Cup Finals. It was just called the in-season tournament last year. But they had their struggles too. So I think if you play guys 30 minutes and they're not used to this pace, you're risking the breakdown factor moving forward. So I don't have a big problem with it. I think you're going to make some mistakes. And again, we talked about this, or I talked about this yesterday too. I can't tell you how many people within the league have unsolicited come up to me and say they love what Taylor Jenkins does. They love how he runs the team. They love his stuff. Other coaches, other scouts. This is a guy that has a lot of respect. And I think, sometimes maybe you do overthink it. He's still a young coach. And, after last night, he's now got more wins as a coach than anybody with the Grizzlies. Now, whether that's, fair or unfair to judge it to certain guys, Lionel left and then Dave Yeager left and Hollins left. And that is what it is, but the numbers are the numbers, and he's got 215 wins, and that's one more than anybody else ever had. And so I think all this, like, he's taken a lot of, I think, unjustified criticism. And if you're criticizing him for last year, I think that's unfair. I don't think it's fair to have all these questions about the training staff and what they do. It's just an easy kind of way to point out, well, why are we doing this? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Nobody can prevent a guy from stepping on another guy's foot coming down the court or turning an ankle. These aren't like chronic issues where you had somebody doing the wrong treatment or wrong, you know, rehab and that happened. You know, some people may point towards what happened with Steven Adams, and, you know, the facts of that, those details are known amongst the people that know them. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody really knows all the facts, and I'm sure people have questions, but I don't, to answer your question, Michael, I guess it's a kind of a long-winded roundabout way. I don't have a big problem with him managing the minutes the way he sees fit, trying to find what combinations really work, and then starting to extend the minutes as the guys really understand, you know, the physical toll this pace can take on them.
Yeah.
We're talking with Eric Hasselstein, of course, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network. Next game for the Grizzlies Saturday night in Chicago. Airtime will be 6:30 for pregame. Eric will have tip-off at 7. Eric, I was kind of thinking about this a little bit last night. Is Jaren's year going underappreciated? Because I feel like he's been very, very good. And I'm not, I know maybe with minutes not allowing it to be the statistical insane year, but he's, I believe, shooting the best he has in terms of effective field goal percentage, best from the free throw line. He's having another good year. If he's gonna shoot 35.6 from three, I think we would all probably sign up for that. I just feel like, and to me, the other thing is the eye test. Like, when he's on the floor, they're clearly better. What do you made of his season so far?
I think he's been great. I think he's played at an all-star level. I think there, obviously, you can micromanage and pick times where it didn't click, but, you know, he's taking the fight to other teams. I think there are times we'd like to see maybe more of him in the high post or the low post against smaller guards. I thought last night they recognized that 3-2 shell, like the perimeter defense that the Nuggets ran. The Sixers tried some of that, and they immediately started flashing into the middle, and Jaren went into the middle against a smaller guy. So I think he's been sensational. You know, I think the block numbers are pushing back up towards 2 blocks a game, and he's defensively a problem when he's, you know, guarding other guys. And, you know, yeah, you gave Joel Embiid the mid-range twos, but I think they'll trade that for, you know, getting guys in foul trouble, getting them down low, three-point plays, doubling down, giving open threes to good shooters. I can live with mid-range twos. You know, Embiid's a terrific player. He draws a tough assignment every night. I think he's showing maturity. I think he's showing leadership. Things I've heard him say that aren't in the middle of a game, whether it's at morning shoot-arounds or, you know, to the teammates, I think he's growing up and he's getting it, and then that's a great thing to see.
With Jake LaRavia, Eric, so, you know, we would hear in flashes over the last couple of years, like, oh, you know, Jake's been impressive in practices or summer league, sure, or whatever the case may be. Do you think what we're seeing right now, like, is this the version of him that's finally putting it together?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a tough spot for him to be in, too, knowing that they didn't pick up the option.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a hard thing, I think, for a player to hear. They know that, you know, they've got to do what they can to impress, but they've still got to play within the framework of the system and the offense. And I think for him, there's still times where, you know, he maybe overthinks it and tries to do a little too much, but that's part of being a young player. I mean, it's really essentially a second year. I mean, he's been banged up so much, and towards the end of the year, he got his opportunity last year, and now he's getting it with the more regular group of players, and he's helped them. He helped them last night. He's helped them in multiple games this year. So you've got a logjam at that position.
Mm.
There's only two wings, really, that can be on the floor at the same time when you have a 4 and a 5, and you got Wells, and you'll have Gigi Jackson, and you've had Vince Williams, and you got Marcus Smart, and you got Desmond Bane, you got Luke Kennard, and, you know, throw John Conjure in the mix. There's a lot of guys there. Yeah. So the minutes, yeah, it's you've got you know, there's been a lot of talk about condensing the roster, and that's what they did a couple of years ago, and they may have to examine doing that again. But, you know, better to have too many guys than not enough, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Eric, you mentioned that Taylor Jenkins now the all-time winningest. He has the most wins now in Grizzlies regular season history. When you look at kind of the overall body of work, is that really more of a it's more of a statistic that kind of speaks to the stability of the franchise that we've seen since Taylor's gotten here?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't hurt that they had
John Morant,
the number four pick. You know, Jaren Jackson when he got there, and then they got John
Morant. By the way, we looked this up today. Jaren is Michigan State's last first-round draft pick.
What?
Hmm. Well.
And I believe Xavier is...
Wow.
I think Xavier might be their last draft pick.
No,
Max Christie.
Eric's right. Max Christie in 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Bridges was there. Yeah. So that draft. But yeah, it's been a different time. That's the way the game has changed in college basketball. So, you know, for the stability. Yeah, they built a culture. They believed in it. They've kept the core group of guys together. Think about since Taylor's been here. Jaren's been here. Ja's been here. Dez has been here. A lot of guys have been here long term. It's not turn over the roster. So the stability hasn't hurt, and they found success that first year. You know, when COVID shut the league down, they were in the eighth position, and there was 20 games left, and they had a very good chance of making that eighth spot before we now have what we, you know, the play-in tournament after the COVID year. And then you go to the play-in tournament the next year, and you eliminate Golden State. You lose to Utah. You're the number two seed 2 years in a row. In the second year, you lose two critical rebounders. The Lakers take advantage. The next year, you have an unprecedented season with injuries that nobody in the league had ever seen. And yet they've stuck to the game plan. They changed the coaching staff over because they felt like it was, you know, in the front office, felt like it was time to do some new things. And he's there. So... yeah, there's been stability. There's no doubt about it. I think it's from the top down. There's been stability in the front office. It's been the same group. So, yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. And as I've always said, continuity in this league breeds success. Taylor Jenkins started his career in one of the most, you know, continuous franchises for a 25-year span we've ever seen. The way the Spurs operated during those years with Duncan and Ginobili and Parker, and even after that, they had the same thing going at all times. So, yeah, it matters. It really does. You look at teams that struggle, they're constantly making changes, constantly trying to shift their focus or their roster, and it doesn't really work that well.
All right, so I haven't eaten today, and I know you got what's the travel schedule? Are y'all leaving tomorrow? What are we eating this
week?
I want to know what you're eating this weekend. Chicago's one of my favorite eating cities.
I see. We are leaving tomorrow around 3 o'clock, so we will get into Chicago, probably to the hotel around 6. I would imagine a run to Lou Malnati's is in order for deep dish. That's closer, so, close to the hotel.
Giannotto put it out on Twitter. They had snow today.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm packing a coat. I'm packing the big blue coats back out of the closet. So yeah, that'll be in order. I don't know. Rob and I might hit up the Spin in Chicago and play a little ping pong on Friday night. I was talking about this last night on the broadcast during the preseason, just looking for a place to watch college football.
Yeah,
I kind of stumbled on a sports bar that's like an Iowa hub, and they're playing at 11, and it was a blast to be in there. Iowa's playing that day. I think I don't know if they were playing Wisconsin. They were playing somebody, but beat the brakes off of them, and everybody was having a great time. And considering they're 6.5-point favorites on the road at Maryland, you kind of expect the same, but it's walking distance to the hotel. The food was really good, so we'll probably hit up there too.
All right, my man. Safe travels this weekend.
See you, Eric.
Thanks, brother. All right, see you guys.
That is Eric Hasseltine, of course, the Memphis Grizzlies radio network play-by-play announcer. It is one of the best times of the year over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. The Black Friday sale is going on right now, and that means that you can buy gifts that give gifts. Robert Irwin Jewelers' annual Black Friday sale means that with every purchase of $299 or more, you can get a free gift. For example, you get the 1/5 K carat diamond hoop earrings in 10 karat gold for $549 and get a free pair of JBL noise canceling headphones. Also, check out the Flexi diamond bangle bracelets. They're flexible and they contour to fit her wrist. You can wear one or stack a few for a bolder look. Makes for the perfect gift for her. If you spend $999, you can get a free Nintendo Switch with that as well. Also, of course, it's engagement season. And if you spend $49.99 or more on your engagement ring, get a free 85-inch smart TV. And also, if you're going to go out and buy the engagement ring and you hear about the custom process and you're like, man, I don't know if I trust myself, I cannot recommend it enough because the people at Robert Irwin Jewelers are so easy to work with and they make the entire process super simple. They can even just, they can put a ring together from an idea that you have, or you can do what I did, which is I went in with pictures that my wife said, take these to Howie. We did that, got our ring, put it together, came in under budget. I cannot recommend the process enough, but don't take my word for it. You can also have the meant to be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with the ring, in 365 days, you have the opportunity to return it at the full purchase price. Black Friday sale going on right now. See store for details while supplies last. Free financing, bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Tigers taking on USF. We got to take a look at the sports weekend and the sports viewing weekend. We'll do tasting menu. We'll also get into a few other news and story notes. Jason Smith also going to join us during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.